The gender pay gap is relatively constant across the world. We hear this number that women make 81 cents to the dollar. That's usually what people have in mind. In fact, I show that in developing countries, for entrepreneurs, the differences can be even larger than that.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Mark Twain wrote that there are only two certainties in life, death and taxes. Well, economists have uncovered a third certainty. There's going to be death, taxes, and a gender pay gap. Almost everywhere in high and low income countries alike, women earn less than men. A new paper examines why the male vegetable sellers of Jaipur earn more than their female competition. Solène Delecour of Berkeley is one of the researchers, and she joins me now. Solène, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello, Tim.
I'm certainly used to, reporting research about the gender pay gap, where the stories about white-collar employment in offices near you in California. Are the inequalities as large when we're thinking about self-employed workers in low-income countries?
As a gender pay gap is relatively constant across the world. We hear this number that women make 81 cents to the dollar, meaning that for every dollar that men earn, women earn 81 cents. That number is what we call unadjusted, which means that this number doesn't take into account differences in occupation or education level. That's usually what people have in mind. In fact, I show that in developing countries, for entrepreneurs, the differences can be even larger than that.
In general, how do we explain this?
There are many different steps, which are called the entrepreneurial process. From the very moment that a man and woman open their businesses, there are differences. Even the type of people who choose to open a business differ by gender. So men will, on average, have a higher education level. They may have different skills, different social networks, abilities, motivations. And then the type of business that men and women choose to open is different. For example, women tend to disproportionately start businesses in retail as opposed to manufacturing. And that type of decision from the very start constrains the potential profitability of businesses. And that is even before the business has opened. So a lot of decisions feed into the process of starting a business, and men and women face different constraints at every step. Once men and women open businesses, there are large differences, in part because women have more trouble accessing capital. And so as a result, women-owned businesses are typically smaller than men's. And these are the usual explanation that have been brought up. They relate to a sector, they relate to differences in capital or business characteristics.
So we're looking at one particular sector in one particular location, the vegetable sellers of Jaipur in India. Tell me about this job. Who typically does it? What do they do? What's a working day like?
So these sellers are working in urban markets in Jaipur. We looked at all the major vegetable markets in Jaipur. So there are 11 of them, and we created a census of them. There are over 1,000 of these sellers in Jaipur alone. These sellers go every day to the wholesale market. They purchase produce from the big box at the wholesale market and sell it in the small box at their stall in the market. They sell all day, every day. In fact, often they sell 7 days a week. And selling is their primary economic activity. Usually the market starts a little bit later in the day, you know, maybe in the late morning or early afternoon, and it goes on until the evening, maybe around 10 or 11 p.m. That would be a typical day for these sellers.
It sounds like pretty hard work. Now, given what you've said about the relative success of entrepreneurs, how much more money do men make out of doing this than women do in this market?
We showed that women make 65 cents to the dollar.
Uh-huh.
And so men make on average 50% more in daily revenues compared to women. And I talk in terms of daily revenues as opposed to daily profits, because profits can be notoriously difficult to measure in this context, sometimes because the costs can be spread out over a very long time period. It can be difficult to see what is a daily profit when you're looking at costs that have it spread out over weeks or months sometimes.
So you set out to find out why this is. What candidate explanations out of all the ones that you listed earlier on, and many more I imagine as well, what candidates did you investigate?
Going into the project, we had no idea what is driving this gap. And so we started out with a very long list of candidate explanations, and we successively rolled out a number of them. We first collected observational data at the market, and we were able to rule out, for example, differences in hours worked. We showed that both men and women work roughly the same number of hours per week. Mm-hmm. We were able to rule out a price setting in the sense that we found no significant differences in prices per vegetable, or even as there is price variation throughout the day, we found no difference in sort of the price trend based on the seller's gender. So we were able to rule out some basic differences like hours worked or prices. What was really striking was the differences in inventory. We found that men's inventory were 40% larger than women's. So they had much more to sell. And something else that we noticed, although we were not able to measure it quantitatively, is that women tended to be perhaps located in different locations than men within the market. However, it is very difficult for me to measure what's a good location. Like, what does that look, you know, quantitatively? But these were the two main differences that we observed. The inventory, especially the quantity of inventory and the location, were really standing out as being very different. And a third category of explanation that we looked at was related to the behavior, both the behavior of the buyer as well as the behavior of the seller.
I noticed that those separate out the buyer behavior from the seller behavior. Why is it important to disentangle these?
These two type of explanations would lead to drastically different policy implications. If the problem is that women have different business characteristics, then we perhaps want to think of interventions that would aim at narrowing differences in terms of inventory, for example. Whereas if one of the key drivers of the gap relates to buyer's behavior, it's actually a lot harder to change in a way. Getting rid of bias or discrimination can be, is notoriously difficult. But that would call to two different policy implications.
Right. So first of all, you set up an experiment to have a look at demand constraints. What did you do here?
So to look at demand side constraints, we had to control all of the supply side characteristics, by which I mean we control both the business characteristics and the seller's behavior. If you look at what's happening in the market, business characteristics tend to differ by gender. For example, women tend to have smaller businesses. And so if you just look at buyer's behavior, you don't know if the fact that buyers are more likely to buy from men is related to the seller's gender or to the business characteristics that are typically associated with men business owners. What we did to really focus on demand side constraints is that we set up our own businesses. We created our own stalls and we randomly varied whether the seller was a man or a woman. In addition, to really strictly focus on demand side differences or buyer's behavior, we wanted to control for everything that relates to seller's behavior. And the best way to do that was for us to hire, if you like, actors, like Confederate sellers or actors who are paid a fixed wage. We provided them with a standardized script so that even what they were saying would be constant by gender. we fix the prices, and to account for differences in the perceived quality of the goods, we chose to sell packaged goods. So these goods would be manufactured, like biscuits. And you go to the supermarket and you see a packet of biscuits, you don't care if you pick the first one or the third one because they were manufactured by the same firm. By selling these packaged goods at a fixed price, holding the seller's behavior constant, what we did is control for all supply side characteristics, both in terms of the business and in terms of the seller, with the exception of the gender of the seller. And we could then measure what is the difference in a business performance based on the gender of the seller, holding everything else constant.
And what was the difference?
And we found that women did not perform any worse than men once we controlled for everything related to the business characteristics and the seller's behavior. And that points to the fact that perhaps buyer's behavior was not a major driver of the gender gap in that context.
Okay, so then we have to move on to seller behavior. Let that vary. How did you do that?
The first experiment that I described was extremely constrained. You know, in many ways, it was a little bit artificial. We controlled so much to be able to focus on the buyer's behavior that we then decided to run a second field experiment that would relax some of these constraints. And in particular, in the second experiment, we set up our own shops. And again, the concept is the same. We create our own businesses and randomize the gender of the seller, but we no longer controlled for seller's behavior, prices, and perceived quality. Instead, we've recruited real vendors to sell produce. There are 11 markets in Jaipur, and we selected three of them to set up a pair of shops, one that would be run by a woman and one that would be run by a man on any given day. We then supplied these businesses with the exact same inventory. We gave people the same types of vegetables, the same quantity of input, and also the same quality of input. And we were also able to control for the location within the market. And then we recruited 282 sellers to come and sell in our own businesses. But they were free to behave however they wanted. They were free to set their own prices. And so in the second experiment, we were able to look not just at the buyer's behavior, but also at the seller's behavior.
And the result for that?
And in that second experiment, we found that providing men and women the same business closes the gap in earnings. Prior to our experiment, men were making 50% more than women. But in our experiment, there was no difference in business performance by gender.
I see. So there's no difference in the behavior of men and women as sellers. There's no difference in how the customers are behaving. So those explanations, I guess we can rule out. What's an explanation for this?
That's the next step that we have to figure out. You know, there is a puzzle in the literature on the gender profit gap. When you give capital to men-owned and woman-owned businesses, it increases business performance, but only for men. And so this is a little bit of a puzzle. Like, why does providing capital to men lead to an increase in business performance, but not for women? And in a way, our experiment was going a step further, where we didn't just give capital, we just gave an entire business. Okay, so there was no need to take the capital as an input and transform that in an output. It was, you know, the business was already there. And so the question is, perhaps, how does the access to input relate to the ability of using it? And by ability, I don't mean that women are unable to use it, but perhaps they face different constraints or different opportunities that prevent them from making use of the resources at their disposal. Something that I have been thinking about a lot, and I have recently published a paper on that topic, is childcare. That was in a different setting, but I show that women are much more likely than men to have a child with them in their store. And that strongly correlates with differences in profitability. Another big difference is also perhaps location. I recently collected data showing that women are much more likely than men to run a business near their home. And that also correlates with differences in business profitability. So overall, the question of what is driving the gender gap, it was partially answered in our paper, in the sense that if you take the last step of the entrepreneurial process, once men and women have opened their businesses, we show they can perform as well if given the same opportunity. And now the next step is to figure out what is in the way of providing the same business opportunities for men and women.
Do you have any policy prescriptions at the moment, or do we have to wait until you've done that research?
Figuring out how to narrow down the differences in terms of business characteristics and location is where a lot of the effort could be focused. But how exactly to implement that in a way that benefits women and narrows the gender profit gap, it will take more time to figure that out.
Good luck in figuring it out, Solène. It's really interesting work so far. And for any of you, if you go shopping this weekend at a market and you see two identical stores, don't worry, it's probably just one of Solène's experiments. Thank you very much, Solène.
Thank you very much.
The paper's called Does Gender Matter for Small Business Performance? Experimental Evidence from India. And the authors are Solène Delecour and Odysseia Ong. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org.